This is Barry Tyker of the Oral History Project. Today is August 11th, 1999. I am in the archives of Steenbach Library with David O'Brien, a student who was from the first class of the Chadbourne Residential College. Let's talk a little bit about your background first, Dave. Where were you born? Where did you go to school? Things like that.
Sure. I grew up in Fitchburg, Wisconsin, so right outside of Madison, and went to high school in Verona. I grew up on a farm in Fitchburg, my parents' farm just south of here, and so Madison has always kind of been home, so to speak. I mean, Fitchburg and Verona are great small towns, but Madison has always kind of been the place that I considered home.
When you were in high school, did you have any idea, what kind of studies did you focus on? Was it just sort of the general stuff, or did you have anything that you had a particular interest in?
In high school, I was really interested in kind of theater, music, and kind of leadership within those areas. I was positive that I wanted to be a director or teach or something like that in theater and music throughout most of high school.
Mm-hmm. Why did you choose UW?
Actually, kind of in a backwards way. I when I started looking at schools, I was totally convinced that I shouldn't come to Madison because I thought it was too big and too close to home, and I thought I knew everything there was to know. And soon, as I started looking at colleges, I realized, maybe that wasn't quite so true, and maybe I had something pretty good right in my backyard. So I decided to come.
Did you consider any others?
I did. I looked at a lot of different schools, and I was really kind of set on going to a small private school somewhere in the Midwest, but just got stuck on Madison.
So you graduated in the spring of 95.
That's right.
And you began UW here in the fall of 95. Mm-hmm. How did you determine where you were going to live that first semester?
I went through the, it's now called a Place to Call Home, but I think it was probably called that then too, the little booklet that you get from university housing that explains the residence halls. And I looked at the descriptions, and well, they all sounded fine. and I'd heard, you know, some people talk about different halls that they really liked or didn't like as much. And actually, I ranked my first choice as Chadbourne because I thought it was a great location and it sounded like a decent building. And my second choice, I think, was Whitty and then Cronsage or Bradley or something like that.
So you got your first choice.
I did.
You moved in that wonderful weekend. Do you remember anything about your first moving? I've driven by so many times where all these laundry carts are out there and the parents are, you know, helping the kids pile in, take their clothes in and all that stuff.
Sure.
Was that did anything happen exceptional in that weekend?
Actually, my experience was very different than that. I moved in early because I was working for food service.
Oh.
And I was going to work in the cafeteria. And so I moved in 3 or 4 days before everyone else and was totally bored out of my mind. Like, you know, there was nobody around. I harassed my house fellow for most of the day one day. And actually, I think because of harassing him, he got sick of talking to me. So he kind of took me down and dumped me in front of the Hall Association people downstairs because I had mentioned that I had been involved in a lot of stuff in high school. And he thought that was probably a good way to get rid of me for a couple hours.
Tell me about the Hall Association.
The Hall Association there at the time was the Barnard and Chadbourne Hall Association. Barnard was connected to Chadbourne. It was known as Bach. Mm-hmm. And basically, when I went downstairs, I'd heard a little bit about it. Students paid a $20 fee to become a member of the Hall Association, and from that fee, they were entitled to some services, like dry cleaning, and I think they checked out games and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then also there were a lot of programs that the Hall Association would plan, and students could be a floor representative if they wanted to the Hall Association. But they actually, because it was the first year that men had lived in Chadbourne, they had left three executive positions open for incoming students or men who moved into the building to kind of balance out the board, and I kind of became interested in one of those.
So men had not lived in Chadbourne up to that point.
That's right.
Did that cause any concerns or any problems initially?
Actually, yeah. There was a lot of discussion and a number of articles in the newspaper about whether or not people thought it should go co-ed, and they thought that men were going to ruin the building.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some animosity from some people when we first moved in that you know we were gonna all trash the place and everything was gonna go downhill. But after a few weeks, it kind of relaxed.
Yeah, was it set up so it was alternate floor? How did they set up the?
Yeah, every floor was then and still is single gender. Mm-hmm. So there's a house fellow on one floor, and it's a house, and then every other floor is male and female.
So in that aspect, at least, the CRC has pretty much adopted what had been set up before their development.
Yeah, pretty much just basically out of necessity in the structure. There's only one bathroom on each floor.
There you go.
And it makes it kind of tough.
That'll do it. Tell me about your involvement in the in BAC, in the Barnard Chadburn Hall Association.
Well, shortly after that day where my house fellow dumped me in front of the execs, I applied to be an executive officer and became one of the co-programmers. And immediately, I've always kind of been somebody who jumps into things and goes crazy with them, so I started getting involved right away and planning a lot of programs and working with the organization and trying to make it better and things like that, and so it became a pretty big part of my life because mm-hmm. it took up a lot of time and it was a lot of fun too.
You said that there was a $20 fee for what percentage of the students paid that fee? Approximately.
I'm gonna guess probably a little under half. Mm-hmm. So about half the building would mm-hmm. actually pay the fee.
Did you find it worthwhile?
I did personally. But I think a lot of people felt like they paid their $20 and then they expected that somebody would do something for them and they weren't sure exactly what that was, and then half the time they didn't get their mm-hmm. money's worth out of the car. Mm-hmm. So
you had that first year where you were the first among the first males to reside in Chadburn, and historically that has always been a women's dorm,
right.
So that really changed the whole nature of that configuration there.
Absolutely.
And then the second year, another change started to appear. When did you at all during that first year start hearing anything about other possible changes in Chadburn?
Around April of that first year.
This would be April of 96.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I was talking to Sarah Shute, who was the residence life coordinator at the time, and she and I had kind of developed a bond because I had discovered partway through the year that as I was struggling with what I wanted to major in and what I wanted to do with the rest of my life, I mentioned to her that what I'd really like to do is do box stuff for the rest of my life and work in a residence hall. And she said, well, you know, people get paid to do that, like me. So she had kind of an interest in helping me along, and she mentioned that that there was this faculty member who wanted to turn Chadburn into an honors dorm, and mm-hmm. and was looking for a few Chadburn residents to serve on a committee to talk about it and discuss the possibility. And I was a little bit concerned because I didn't know what that would mean because I wasn't an honors student,
mm-hmm.
and so I didn't know if that would mean that I wouldn't be able to be in the building anymore or whatever. But you know, I said I'd be interested in serving on the committee, and I went to my first meeting probably the end of April.
Before we get to that meeting, what you're saying is did you enjoy that first year in Chadburn?
Oh, I loved it.
If this would never have happened, you would have definitely stayed on for the second year?
Sure, yeah. And I was planning on staying on for the second year, and I had actually applied. And about that time, I was waiting to hear back on whether I'd be a president or whatever for the next year of the Hall
for
Association.
For the Hall Association, yeah. For BAC.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, now you're going to have this first meeting. This would be your first meeting with your first time you met Bill Cronin. Right?
Yeah.
Tell me about the meeting.
It was interesting. We met in the one of the meeting rooms in Barnard Hall, and it was myself and
okay. Oh, how many people?
No, oh, there were probably I'm gonna guess a dozen people.
Okay.
Maybe less. About a third students, two thirds faculty and staff. And I think I may have been the only student from Chadburn there. I think so. And we all sat around and Bill kind of explained his vision for this thing, and to be perfectly honest, I thought he was crazy. I thought he was nuts, and he's explaining this thing, and he's talking about students being involved and not having a hall association, and but somehow that's gonna get more people involved and participating and interacting with faculty members and doing community service. And I just thought it was a ridiculous notion. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, of course, I was used to working with the Hall Association, and I thought, you know, without that structure, mm-hmm. nothing would ever happen, mm-hmm. and it would all just fail. And I also was a little bit concerned because it felt like somebody was kind of coming in and taking over and trying to kill Bach.
And did Bill talk at all about the honors dorm? Was that brought up? Or
he did. He mentioned a little bit about the honors houses that had been in housing for a few years. Detling House in Celery Hall and Chamberlain House in Crossage, and a little bit about the success of those programs. And he mentioned a little bit about the experimental college, mm-hmm. But didn't go into a whole lot of detail mm-hmm. about it at the time.
Interesting. So you left the room. What happened next? Where did you talk to other people about it who were there or who weren't there? What happened? How did it go from there?
I went back and I talked to my friend Chris, who was the member relations director for Bach and was going to be my roommate the following year, and told him about the meeting. And he was a little bit concerned, well, more like outraged that that these people were coming in and taking over. And so we talked about it a little bit and talked about it with some other people. And there were a few people who were a little bit concerned, but, you know, we wanted to kind of wait and see what happened. And so I figured I'd just go to a few more meetings and see what came of it.
What came of it?
Well, for one thing, we kind of dropped the concept of it being an honors dorm. Mm-hmm. There was initially that was part of the concept, but I'm not sure so much if it was part of the Bill's plan or just how it got communicated to some people. But Bill wanted it to be made very clear that any student who wanted to could participate, because he felt like limiting it only to honor students would kind of separate it from the mm-hmm. rest of campus. Mm-hmm. And we started talking about the philosophy of the program and the concepts and things like that. But there were only a few more meetings before the end of the school mm-hmm. year, so I still didn't get a real good picture of what was going to come of it.
Was this the listening session or
no? That actually didn't happen until the following fall.
Oh, okay.
I was
so before we get to the listening session. So you ended that year, that first year at Chadburn, sort of up in the air.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't. Was it clear that this plan was going to move forward, or did it seem to be something that was still in the discussion stage? What were you thinking as the semester wound down and you prepared for summer?
Well, Bill seemed pretty confident that it was going to happen. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure. I didn't know exactly what kind of process we'd have to go through to make it happen. If it was a sure thing or if it was, you know, just something that Bill figured would happen mm-hmm. and nobody else did. And so I really didn't think a whole lot of it. Mm-hmm. I was kind of caught up in planning for Bach for the next year. And so, you know, I didn't worry about it too much at that point.
So summer passes, does fall start out pretty much the same way it had, or how does that change?
Yeah, actually, and it was interesting because
fall of 97.
Sure. Yeah. Actually, of 96.
96, I'm sure. You're right. Yeah.
We started planning for Wisconsin Welcome, and it was kind of funny because some of the things that we had talked about in the committee meeting, some of the values and concepts of student involvement, I thought, hey, let's try some of them out in the Hall Association model. And so we did some things like some very intentional Wisconsin Welcome activities to try to welcome people. We did a lot of outreach and a lot of encouraging students to get involved in the planning of the events and not just mm-hmm. attending events. Mm-hmm. It worked okay. It wasn't.
And this was at the general orientation session.
During the Wisconsin Welcome Program, the week of activities at the beginning of the school year, and it worked pretty well. You know, it wasn't fantastic. You know, it was. You know, a program here and there and a few people involved. And we had a lot of people involved initially at the beginning of the year, but involvement kind of dropped off mm-hmm. as the year went on. Mm-hmm. So as far as Bach's concerned.
So you start at school. How did Bill and the CRC come back into play in the fall?
Well, in the fall, we had left a couple of spots open for new freshmen on the executive board, and as soon as we got those folks selected, we started talking about CRC and what kinds of impacts that was going to have on Bach, and on the community, and a number of people were pretty concerned, and I was kind of lukewarm on the idea initially, but after talking to them, I really kind of felt a little bit uncomfortable with
What were their concerns, basically?
basically that there were a very small number of students who had any role in making the decision to do this, and at least from our perspective, a
To
small number
convert to CRC? Yeah,
a
okay.
small number of Chadbourne students. There were students from outside of Chadbourne, from the honors program, from the honors houses, and some students that were really interested in making Chadbourne happen, but we felt like, people had come in and kind of done a hostile takeover of Chadbourne, and so we weren't real comfortable with that, and also with the fact that it would mean the end of Bach, which was something that we had worked really hard to build, and now it was kind of like it was just being taken away, and so me and a number of other people were pretty concerned about the decision.
Now, let me get just straight in my head. The decision to go to CRC was made. What you were implementing CRC in the fall of 96, or you were still in the discussion. I'm not sure exactly when it became something cast in cement and when it left the discussion stages.
Sure. It was presented to me as though it was a set thing
Okay.
from the beginning.
Oh,
And
all right.
so that fall we were really kind of doing some of the planning to implement it.
Okay, so you were still in sort of in the old plan, but you were getting ready to implement the new plan. Is that an accurate
Right,
way? All
right.
right, got it. So there were these concerns expressed by others that you began to take seriously. What happened then?
Then about that point, I approached Bill, and I hadn't talked to him a whole lot. And to be honest, I was a
Bill
little
Cronin, we're
right.
talking
Yeah,
about, yeah.
yeah. And I was a little intimidated by him, because, he was this scary guy who came in and wanted to take over Chadbourne, and I thought he was crazy. And so I went to him and I said, look, I'm a little concerned about the process that we've gone through here, and I don't feel like a lot of people were consulted when this decision was made. And I'm like, I think that, it seems like this is a good idea, but I think we need to pull in more people in making this decision. And he immediately said, absolutely, it's absolutely what we need to do. And so we set up a listening session, a discussion session, during the time that would normally be held for a Bach meeting. I think it was Wednesday night or something like that. And invited students to come down and talk about it.
Invited students from the entire dormitory?
That's right.
Okay.
And actually, I believe we might have even invited students from the honors houses, because there were some concerned students in the honors houses, because it meant that those programs were going to be shut down for the following year to kind of encourage those students to live in Chadbourne. And so we had this big listening session, and there were a lot of heated words, but kind of in the end, people seemed to feel comfortable with it, and people seemed to feel like this was okay. And as I got listening to what Bill was saying, when he was really trying to sell it, because traditionally he'd kind of been preaching to the choir and talking to
Right.
people who were excited about it anyway, but he as he was trying to sell the program, I got listening to what he had to say, and it really made sense to me, because I thought, this is exactly the kinds of things that I would have liked to have done with Bach, but something never worked. There was something there that never worked. I always thought that it would be great to interact with faculty. It would be great to do community service stuff. It would be great to have everybody feel like they were part of a community. It would be great to connect with the classroom and all these types of things that we really that have become some of the core values of Chadbourne. And we just hadn't been able to make them work. And I thought, hey, maybe it could work, and if it does, great. And if not, we're not too much worse off than we already are. So
in that listening session, was Bill up there representing? Was he the sole representative of the program?
No,
Bill Cronin.
There were actually several people who represented the program, and I think I actually may have answered some questions too, because I'd been on the committee and things like that. But I kind of tried to stay quiet during that session.
When the session ended and you went back and had your little rump sessions in the different rooms, what were people talking about then? How had their perceptions changed, if at all?
Some folks who were kind of lukewarm were now excited about it, like me. Mm-hmm. And some folks who were pretty negative about it were now at least lukewarm. You know, so that was good.
Yeah.
That was a good result of the meeting.
Where did it go from there? How did it develop?
Well, one of the conversations that we had in the next CRC committee meeting, which was becoming known as the steering committee, was kind of the result of that meeting. And Bill said one of the things that he had really learned during that meeting was the importance of being very clear about how we communicate the values and how we communicate what this program is. And that's one of the lessons that's really kind of stayed with us is the importance of making sure that people understand what they're getting into and making sure that it's very clear what Chadbourne is and what it isn't. And so we talked for quite a while about modeling a text that would explain to students, and it also kind of became a marketing piece to encourage students to live there or to choose not to live there the following year. And it was a text that was distributed pretty widely and a list of frequently asked questions about living in Chadbourne, about what the program was going to be about and what types of changes would happen and things like that.
Interesting. You said that there was a CRC steering committee. How had that developed initially?
It seemed like it was folks that Bill had invited to participate in the committee, but he was pretty open about who we invited.
And this was started in the fall of '96.
It started to form in the spring of
'96,
and I'm not sure exactly how long it was going on before I got involved with it. I don't think very long.
Okay, was it out of the steering committee that task forces were assigned?
It was.
And you were assigned to the.
I co-chaired the Wisconsin Welcome Committee and served on the Governance Committee.
Okay. Let's talk about the Governance. Is it a task force or a committee? I just want to get these things straight.
I think it was a committee.
Okay. Talk about the initiation of that committee and how it worked over time. Let's bring it right up to what's going on now. This seems to be a very important aspect of CRC.
Well, the initial Governance Committee, I didn't realize it was important as it would become in kind of shaping what Chadbourne is about, but we really kind of broke it down to the basic elements. We started talking about what are the things that we absolutely need to have in order to make Chadbourne operate, and worked off of this concept that Bill liked to use of bubbling up, that ideas ought to come from students. Mm-hmm. And ought to come from any student in the hall, and any student ought to be able to say, hey, I want to make this happen, and it ought to be able to happen, rather than like the traditional model where the execs came in or the advisor came in and said, you know, here's an idea that I have, what do you think? Everybody's kind of smiles and nods.
Mm-hmm. Not the top down.
Either. Exactly, right. Exactly. Okay. So, you know, we started talking about, well, what does that look like? And it was kind of interesting because, you know, we study government in school and we talk about systems of government and these types of things. But so often, you know, when we set up organizations, we set them up like either like a corporation or like the U.S. government, you know, and everything is very hierarchical and there's a very traditional setting and there's your president, your secretary, your treasurer. We started looking at this and we said, well, let's take it back even farther than that. Like, what do you need to have a government?
Mm-hmm.
It was a great conversation because, you know, I can imagine, you know, when people were starting the U.S., well, what do we need to have a government? And, you know, and of course there are models that you go off of, but but we kind of just started brainstorming what are the essential elements. And we felt like there needed to be a place where everybody got together and talked. And, you know, whether, you know, that at the core of any good community is some time or some place where everybody gets together and shares ideas and, you know, expresses their concerns and makes decisions mm-hmm. together. So we felt like there needed to be one thing where everybody got together and did that. We also felt like the money needed to be really accessible. We had already started talking about charging a fee and that fee being right around $300 for students to live in Chadbourne. And we felt like that money needed to be accessible to students and that students needed to be able to, rather than in the hall association model where they came in and we'd brainstorm a bunch of ideas and people would bring their ideas in and then everybody would vote on whether or not to do a certain project, it needed, you know, and then we would pick like one out of a list. Mm-hmm. It needed to be much more open so that if a student wanted to come in and do something and the community felt like it was an okay thing to do, they could just go do it. And so that was, I mean, that was another component that we felt was pretty important. We also felt that it was important to have someone to facilitate that big general group meeting and that person ought to be a student. And then another piece that we kind of added to it was a group of people who, if nothing else happened the entire year, these people would make something happen. Hmm. And so from that, you know, we kind of brainstormed about 20 or 30 different models. But from that came the concept of a community forum where we had talked about having, you know, student representatives from the floors and things mm-hmm. like that, and we did away with that. We said that any student who wanted to come down and say something could say it. Every student would have their own vote. You know, we discussed the concerns of, well, what if, you know, a bunch of students come down and push something through because they have enough people there to vote that night. And we said, well, you know, then they decided to come down and mm-hmm. other students didn't decide to come down. And so we wanted it to be very open. We came up with the concept of having a community forum chair, but also having a community board of like 8 students. At one point we kind of toyed with the idea of calling it the action team or the A team, but we decided against that. And a group of students who served as advisors to other students who wanted to do programming, who ran the community forum office where videos and games and things like that could be checked out, and who also were responsible for helping facilitate some of the all-hall programming mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Was it, when you first started your brainstorming, was it difficult to break away from the preconceptions that you had been laboring under, like Bach, for example? Did that sort of block your head at first, and was it difficult getting past that?
It was extremely difficult. I kept thinking, I need to try to get this to be as much like Bach as I can, because I know that works. Yeah. And I had a really tough time kind of pulling away from that.
Interesting.
Because, you know, for 2 years, that's what I'd been used to. And in a lesser respect, you know, that's what I was used to in a lot of different forms of government, in high school, mm-hmm. student council and things like that, local government things, that it was always kind of a similar setup. So it was really tough to kind of break away from that and think of it in a different light.
When you were hashing these matters out, how many people were involved on the task force, the committee that was doing
The governance committee, I think, was about 6 people.
And was it all students?
No. It was co-chaired by my then roommate Chris, who had been one of the initial mm-hmm. CRC haters and now had come full circle and was all excited about it, like me. And it was co-chaired by Chris and Kevin Helmkamp, who was the Southeast Area Residence Hall coordinator. Mm-hmm. So he worked for University Housing. And I believe Kevin was the only non-student. Other students were Carolyn Herb, Chris Sandsgrant, who was the co-chair, and I think there was like one or two other students, but I can't remember exactly who they were.
When your ideas started to ferment and you got mm-hmm. the idea of the community forum and then the community board, how was this information passed on? To whom did you pass it on to?
For the most part, we passed it on to the rest of the steering committee. Okay. We'd have...
And this was about 20 people?
Yeah. By now, the steering committee had grown pretty mm-hmm. large, and we'd pulled in a lot of people from different areas of the university, from admissions, from the Dean of Students Office, from the Chancellor's Office, a number of different areas.
When you presented this, were you asked questions? Did you have to defend it? How did that work? Was it written, a presentation, or oral?
I think it was oral.
Yeah, okay.
I don't remember totally. But as I recall, it was pretty well received.
Okay.
People felt pretty comfortable that it was open enough that it would encourage students to get involved, but that it was also...
Was Bill Cronin involved on the steering committee?
He was involved on the steering committee, but he wasn't involved on the governance committee.
Okay. Before we get off the steering committee, were there any other members of the steering committee that you recall who were particularly involved or helpful or whatever?
There were a lot of folks who were really involved. I remember Jackie Hitchin, who's from the School of Journalism, was very, very excited about the Food Facilities and Furnishings Committee. The 3F committee, and was very concerned that the environment of the place look a certain way and be welcoming, and mm-hmm. And also that they work with food service to try to improve the food quality so we could attract faculty and staff mm-hmm. members to come eat in the cafeteria with students.
Yeah.
She was very involved. Marion Lanes from University Housing co-chaired the Wisconsin Welcome Committee with me. Mercia Lee from the Chancellor's Office was very involved.
What was Mercia's role? Do you remember?
Mercia was a member of steering, and I don't remember what committee she served on. But she was really, really useful and really helpful in trying, as we were trying to prepare the language mm-hmm. In terms of encouraging students of color and making the language and the materials that we sent out welcoming. So that we would attract students of color to be interested okay. in moving the building.
Okay. So you had this report, I guess, that you probably verbally delivered. You got a favorable reception from the board, mm-hmm. from the steering committee, excuse me. What happened then?
About that point, we were scrambling to get things done because it was the end of April, beginning of May, and school was getting ready to get out.
And this is 97.
Spring of 97.
Yeah,
yep.
Spring of 97.
And I was really excited because I was going to be working in the Residence Life office over the summer
mm-hmm.
as the summer administrative aide. So I was going to get to stay with a lot of the things
mm-hmm.
through the fall. But we left a lot of open-ended things. We weren't sure exactly what the role of the board was completely going to be, even though we had selected half of the people mm-hmm. for the board, because we had decided to do a selection election process where we selected half of the board in the spring.
The steering committee selected half of the board.
As it turned out, the Hall Association execs and the Hall Association advisor from Bach did the selection
oh, okay.
process.
Okay.
And because all, partially because all of the execs from Bach ended up serving on the steering committee
okay.
for the
gotcha.
Most part, because they all got excited about yeah. it. So we selected half of the people because we wanted to make sure that there was a core group of people available to help make Wisconsin Welcome happen in the fall and some of the other things. And then we were going to run an election process in the fall to elect the other half so that we had spots open for first-year students and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Wisconsin Welcome, so you dismissed for the summer at that point. You took your job in the residence hall. How did that go for the summer?
Oh, it was great. It was great. It was kind of fun because we got to joke about me being Chadbourne because you know, we would always present it as something that existed and something that was very much alive, even though it was just alive in all of our minds. Mm-hmm. I mean, there wasn't an actual real program. I mean, there were things planned, but there really wasn't anything to show people. And so I was Chadbourne for the summer.
At this point, you knew that in fall, the new CRC was going to open in all of its glory.
Absolutely.
This was pretty much decided.
Absolutely.
Was there a point during that year that it was the official decision was made, or was this just something that was sort of that became more and more an assumption as the year 96-97 went on?
I think for the most part, it was pretty much an assumption all along that it was going to happen, and it just got at some point during the year before the final go ahead was given from housing. It had to be before September of 96, because the place to call home brochure was put together and the CRC brochure was put out at that point. So probably sometime shortly after I joined the committee, the final decision was made.
You mentioned housing. How was housing throughout this entire process? Was their presence evident? Were they in favor of this? Did they take strong stands one way or another? What's your recollection on that?
They were supportive and they weren't. The housing allocated staff members to be involved in helping plan the process. Marion Lanes was very involved. Mm-hmm. As soon as we had chosen the residence life coordinators for the program, Scott Seiforth and Tim Burkhalter, they became really involved in the process. Mm-hmm. Kevin Helmkamp, as I said before, was very involved. So we had a number of people who were very involved, but I always kind of got the sense that it was in a this was not housing's idea.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that there was kind of this feeling of you know, maybe this is going to go over well and maybe mm-hmm. it's not. And there was a little bit of resistance, but in general, housing was seemed pretty supportive mm-hmm. of the project.
So the summer went along. Did you as Chadbourne
yeah.
and some of your, were promotional brochures sent out at that point? Were incoming students, how were they made aware of exactly what was going on and how what ways Chadbourne different from Witte and Ogg and the rest?
Sure. Well, I'll backtrack a little bit. We started doing some promotional work in the spring of 97.
these years
are tough. We started doing some promotional work in the spring of 97 with doing what do we call them, outreach sessions or something mm-hmm. like that mm-hmm. to all of the floors in Chadbourne and then we did one in each of the other one or two mm-hmm. in each of the other residence halls, and groups of students got together and went and talked about what Chadbourne was all about and tried to encourage, you know, we invited students who were interested in living in that type of community to attend the workshop. And we sent mm-hmm. out a little half sheet flyer to everybody to explain mm-hmm. what was going on. And some of the sessions were really positive and got lots of people, and other ones were, you know, three or four people sitting around in a room, which in some respects was equally positive because mm-hmm. we were able mm-hmm. to answer a lot of questions and things like that. I did a couple of those. I didn't do very many of them because that wasn't my committee, but so a lot of students at the university seemed to understand what was going on. Then we also put together a full color brochure that was printed and sent out to all first year students along with the place to call home document that really talked about what the Chadbourne program was all about, even though it really, again, didn't exist yet, but it spoke of it in a in a "this exists" kind of language. Mm-hmm. There were pictures of people doing things in Chadbourne that were posed, of course. And some of them weren't even in Chadbourne. Some of the people had no idea what Chadbourne was in the pictures. Oh, well. But in any sense, it gave people a physical image of mm-hmm. what Chadbourne was going to be like.
Precisely.
And first year students and folks who were looking at coming to the university started calling and asking questions. I think it was about that time that we set up the CRC webpage, and included that address in materials that we sent out for people who asked for information, and that became pretty popular. There wasn't much on it at mm-hmm. that point, but there was at least some information on what the program was going to be about, who the house fellows were, and mm-hmm. some of the other things. Then also during that summer of 97, before the program started, we put together a mailing to send out to all of the students who were going to be living in Chadbourne the next year. And in some respects, it modeled the type of mailing that the Hall Association would send out. We usually did a little 4x8-inch booklet that kind of sold the Hall Association to people. But this one more or less talked about, well, what can you expect from this community, and what is Chadbourne all about, and kind of specifying some of the things that were very vaguely defined in the brochure. And that was part of my job to put that together during the summer. And we sent it out probably in July to every student who was going to live in Chadbourne in the fall.
The people who lived in Chadbourne in the fall, I don't know if you have access to this information, did they sign up because of CRC, or did they just sign up because they liked the location, or?
I'm gonna guess probably two-thirds signed up because they liked the location, at least as their first mm-hmm. as their first priority, and about a third signed up because they liked the program. Mm. They thought the program sounded great. Some of those location folks also thought the program sounded interesting, but their primary reason for living there was location.
Now, there was a fee that you finally settled on. How much was that?
It was $300.
And this would bring you access to interest activities and things like that?
One of the concepts was that the whole concept of a hall association really kind of created a haves and have-nots kind of concept. Mm-hmm. That if you had your hall association card, you could attend these things that were going on in your mm-hmm. hall. If you didn't have that card, you were excluded from those things. And it seemed pretty ridiculous and not the kind of way to build a community, by saying, mm-hmm. well, if you paid your $20 fee, then you can participate, and if not, mm-hmm. well, then you're out of luck. And so we wanted to make it a requirement that everyone in the building was part of the program. Mm-hmm. There was some discussion at one point in the process, as I recall, about possibly having some floors not be Chadbourne floors, or some floors, only a certain number of floors be Chadbourne floors. But it was felt like it had to be an all or nothing mm-hmm. thing. So.
At that Wisconsin welcome in the fall of '98, how did that go?
It was great. It was great. We had done a lot of planning to make the activities really intentional. And it was interesting because a couple of weeks before the program started, I got a little apprehensive. My old concerns about, well, was this really mm-hmm. going to work? Mm-hmm. Was Bill crazy? Started coming back, and I was a little worried. And as we started doing Wisconsin Welcome, and I went through house fellow training, and we sat around with the house fellows and we talked about the values of the program, and there were these physical people who were equally as excited about this happening. Mm-hmm. I thought, this could happen. Mm-hmm. And then we had signed up about 50 students to come back and serve as Badger buddies, who would help with Wisconsin Welcome. They'd move in early and help with Wisconsin Welcome, and also facilitate what became known as Badger Buddy groups, and each Badger buddy, or pair, excuse me, a pair of Badger buddies were responsible for about a dozen students in the building, and helping them get to know one another and get connected and learn about what Chadbourne was about. So those folks came back, and so here's about 50 people in a room, all talking about the values of this thing, and getting really excited. And then it was about then that I thought, you know, this could actually work, you know, because if 50 people can come back and be excited about this, well, you know, there's a possibility. But then as the week went on, you know, things that were really big risks, you know, we took a lot of big risks with Wisconsin Welcome, from doing a really large convocation, which has become an annual event. We asked all of the students in Chadbourne to get dressed up. Now here you're asking college students to dress up during their first few days of
assuming they even had dress up
exactly,
clothes.
Exactly, assuming they had dress up clothes with them during their first few days of college, get dressed up, go down to the Union Theater, hear a speaker, talk about community, and then come back and eat together. Was a pretty big risk.
Mm-hmm.
But we just kind of laid out the expectation, and all the house fellows communicated this, that, you know, hey, we're part of a community, and these are the things that we're just expected to do as a community. And it's not about, you know, oh, you have to do this. It's just, that's what we do. And that's kind of how we've sold the thing,
mm-hmm,
from the beginning, is just communicating that, you know, we're a community and these are the things that we do together. And I was amazed to see, you know, the clear majority of the building attend this thing.
That's interesting.
You know, and I got my, you know, I told my residents that I expected them to be there, and that we'd meet in the lobby of our floor and join the women's floor that we were connected to, in walking down, and I told them to meet me in the center at a certain time, and this is very much a, you know, okay, so I'm going to stand here and hope that people show up. And, you know, slowly but surely, my residents started trickling down the hall. And, you know, till I probably had 2/3 to 3/4 of my floor standing in the den. And so then, of course, I figured, you know, it's going to take us a long time to get 40 or 50 of us in the elevator. It didn't even occur to me that this was happening on every other floor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, so here's this mass herd of Chadbourne people walking down the sidewalk of Park Street to the Union Theater, and I'm sitting there and I just about cried, because I'm like, this is working.
Yeah.
You know, this is working. And I went up to Bill after the convocation. I just said, this is going to work.
To Bill Cronin.
Yeah. And he said, I think so. You
know? That's great.
And so it was really great. Wisconsin Welcome was a really good way to start out, in that a lot of the risks that we took paid off.
Yeah.
People bought into it, at least initially, you know, mm-hmm, and they seemed to be willing to give it a chance,
yeah,
which was great.
Well, we're going to talk about the staff that greeted the students and some of these other things a little, mm-hmm, later on, but let's get back to the government structure,
sure,
for just a moment and follow that through. So you had a half of the structure was already in place from the semester before.
Right.
And the other half was going to be voted on. Let's talk about that. When did that voting take place, in that fall of 98?
It did. Or 97.
Spring of 97. Yeah, fall of 97. I'm sorry.
That's okay. So residents moved in, and even during the convocation, we started talking about the opportunity to run to be a community board member.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of students who were interested in running, and I think we probably had about 15 students who ran for 4 spots, and, you know, they started. We had no idea what they were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we thought, you know, we'll get these. They had to fill out an intent to run form, and then they were just supposed to show up at the forum meeting, give a 3-minute speech, and then we'd vote. Well, they started campaigning like crazy.
Hmm.
And they're going around the building and going door to door and shaking hands and putting up posters all over the place and you know, handing out candy. And it was just crazy. It became just a circus for about a week and a half. And then finally, the night of the elections came, and not all of the students had been doing that type of campaigning. There were a couple of students who had been a little less active, had been good about trying to meet people, but weren't quite as necessarily dynamic, maybe, as some of the other, or charismatic as some of the other candidates. And so the night of the elections came, and a couple of candidates got up and gave really heartfelt speeches, and a couple of candidates got up and, you know, and said, "Vote for me," you know, and things like that. And the folks who yelled "Vote for me" ended up winning.
Oh, really?
And a lot of the really heartfelt folks and the folks who really seem to care and really want to work hard didn't necessarily. And that's not to say that the folks who won didn't weren't folks who would do a good job. You know, it just seemed like to a lot of people that it had become much more of a popularity contest, particularly in the fact that all of the people who won were white males, even though it was a pretty diverse group of students who ran. There were a number of students of color, there were a number of women who ran, but the folks who won were all white males who had gone around and put up posters of themselves with famous, you know, with famous people, and, you know, had kind of had fun with it, and had, you know, had done a lot of, you know, really charismatic stuff, but hadn't necessarily focused on any issues, you know. And so that concerned a lot of people.
What was the fallout from that?
There was a lot of resentment for a couple of days, and some tears, and some people who had been really tied into Chadbourne feeling alienated, and students talking about how, you know, as a student of color, they felt like they really weren't going to be represented, or as a woman, they didn't feel like they were going to be represented. And it seemed like something had to happen, and something had to be addressed. And Bill really got on that pretty quickly, because he felt like, you know, we needed to do something to make this better. You know, obviously there was some talk of the vote count had been really close, and there was one, apparently there was one woman who was just a few votes away. So do we add another board member, you know, and to allow there to be a woman on the board? And there was one woman who had been selected in the fall, but, you know, she was one out of 8 or 10, you know. And so there was some discussion of adding another woman, but then it was like, well, but this is what people voted on, and so what do we do? And so they sat down with all the board members who were elected and the folks who had been on since the beginning, and sat down with them and had this long, drawn-out, five-hour meeting about what to do, and how can we improve this for this year, and how can we make sure that this doesn't happen consistently, because it, you know, it could be something that really ruins a good thing. So they came out of that with.
No, you were not at that meeting.
I was not at that meeting. Okay. A couple of my residents were on the board. One had been selected in the spring, and another, and I think another had been elected in the fall.
Okay,
I believe, and so I got to hear a lot of what happened in the meeting, and then also being on the steering committee, I got the update from Bill that they had made the decision to add something called mission groups. And initially I thought that was ridiculous, and I had no idea what they're talking about.
You thought it was ridiculous because of...
Well, I didn't know quite what it was that they wanted to do with these mission groups, and what they hoped to solve with them. But in some respects, as I learned a little bit more about what they were, it made a little more sense. Excuse me. Made a little bit more sense to me. What they wanted to do was take some of the components of the CRC mission statement and create groups that were responsible for making sure that we do something to achieve those pieces of the mission. You know, the interest groups were great, and it meant that a lot of students were able to do different types of programs and make different things happen. But, you know, there was nothing to say that there had to be any community service that mm-hmm. happened. And there was nothing to say that there had to be any interactions with
faculty. So interest groups were simply groups that formed based on people who like to collect butterflies or people who like to sing rock and roll or something.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Yep, absolutely. And as a matter of fact, some of them were there was that kind of range. We had everything from the pro wrestling interest group to the outdoors camping interest group to the scones and tea interest group, great. Where they talked about current events.
Okay.
So anyway, the mission groups kind of came out of the conversation, as I understand it, flowed from this discussion of, well, diversity is supposed to be part of the mission of CRC.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like that piece of the mission was upheld here. And what can we do to make sure that that was upheld? So, you know, then they had talked about adding that piece of the, adding a mission group for diversity. But then they decided, well, but community service is also an important part. And faculty staff involvement and outreach to the broader UW and Madison area community, as well as the coffee house and making sure that things happen there. So they developed these five mission groups, faculty staff involvement, diversity,
coffee house,
community service, and community outreach.
Okay.
And they chose, not at that meeting, but over the next few days, chose students to serve as chairs of those committees.
Did it work?
Yes and no. It did and it didn't. Some of the mission groups were really successful. Community service, community outreach, coffee house, faculty staff involvement, were all very, very successful. Diversity was not so successful, partially because it didn't have a very clear vision.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't a real clear idea of what it is that a diversity mission group does. Mm-hmm. Community service, obviously, you go out and do community service stuff. Faculty staff involvement, you get faculty and staff involved in the program and find ways to do that. But diversity, it was tough for the students at the time to come up with an idea of what kinds of things they
mm-hmm.
could do. And the same thing was true with community outreach. They did, I think they did a 3-on-3 basketball tournament with Woody Hall and played Capture the Flag with Kronzage, and that was about it. You know, like there wasn't a whole lot else. And actually more of the community outreach types of functions came out of the other mission groups.
Mm-hmm.
So the community service mission group said, well, let's get together with another hall and do this.
Okay.
Or let's participate in the UW Day of Caring or things like that. And so that mission group wasn't very successful. And actually, the mission group leader ended up having to leave her position toward the end of the year, which wasn't a big deal because she was really the only person in the mission group. And so that mission group just kind of dissolved.
Okay. What mission group were you involved in?
I actually was not involved in any of the mission groups at the time. As a first year house fellow, I was pretty caught up in trying to make my floor work. I also advised the outdoors camping interest group and the leadership development interest group, and those two groups were pretty active throughout the year, and so I was kind of busy with those.
So we come to the end of this first year of real implementation of the program. Mm-hmm. You had a rather hectic start in fall with that election process that didn't go the way anybody had really anticipated. Mm-hmm. And then you developed the mission groups. As you were approaching the end of the 1998, this is school year, 97-98 school year, is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, spring of 98, this yep. is. Did you reevaluate the process at that time, or how did you, what were you thinking? What were you and Bill Cronin and the rest of the people thinking?
Sure. I actually hadn't served on the steering committee that year, and so I was not as in touch as I mm-hmm. could have been, but there were a lot of discussions among the students about how the governance process was working.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they felt like in some respects it was working really well, and in other respects it wasn't working so well. And so they appointed a governance task force, very similar to the initial governance committee, to reevaluate where we were at, to see what had worked and what hadn't and propose a new plan for the next year. And so as it turned out, things pretty much stayed the same. There were some different responsibilities for the board members in terms of their role with the interest groups and the mission groups and a lot of communication roles. But the overall structure stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Were you involved in that task force or?
No, I wasn't.
You were not.
Okay. And I want to say community outreach. What happened to community outreach? Actually, as I rethink it here, the community outreach mission group, I don't think existed the first year. And then they added community outreach for this last school year, for the second year of CRC. And that was the year that the mission group leader left at semester and stopped being involved. It's a little bit unclear on that. Mm-hmm. So,
okay. So the structure changed, remained the same that next year, pretty much. Mm-hmm. What about those elections where you had those seven white males? Did that, what were the results of that?
It was kind of decided that we would run the process a little bit differently the next year, and we would really make a point of encouraging students to vote for people that they felt would represent people in Chadbourne best and not necessarily the people that they thought were the most charismatic.
Mm-hmm.
And talking a little bit about what was the role of a board member.
Mm-hmm.
And less about, you know, and what are the kinds of things that you want to see in a good board member. And so we selected half of the board in the spring, and then in the fall, when it came time to do the elections again, we made a point of having the chair of the forum, Katie Givens, do a discussion with everybody about what were they looking for out of a board member.
Mm-hmm.
And what were the important things to look for in choosing board members. And as it turned out, we ended up with a somewhat more representative board. And so I think that, and actually, yeah. Yeah. And so we had more folks who, and actually we elected five and selected three that year too, which was helpful because they were choosing more people. And so it was a much more worthwhile process. And I think in some respects.
And students remembered some of the things that had happened the previous year.
Absolutely. Yeah. And communicated that to the first year students.
Yeah.
You know, in general, the second year was much better in terms of the election process and choosing a representative group of people for the board.
These are called growing pains, aren't they?
Absolutely.
We'll get into that in just a little bit. What you mentioned that the at least one of the mission groups, the diversity mission group, struggled in that first year. Mm-hmm. They're really trying to get focus and figure out what they were about. Did that change at all in the second year?
It did. I actually served as the advisor to the diversity mission group the second year. We kind of developed what became known as the advising crisis because there were so many groups of students that were working on different things that Bill and Scott and in the beginning Tim Burkhalter, who was the residence life coordinator, then Abba Tucker, who was the residence life coordinator second semester, and then Jen Gilbride Brown, who came at the beginning of the 98-99 school year, just couldn't handle all of the groups that were there. And so I was asked, and Cindy Havens, who was a house fellow in Barnard, was asked to advise a mission group because both of us were interested in pursuing careers in higher ed. And so mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. good for us and good mm-hmm. for Chadbourne. And so so I worked with diversity, and I think the group was much more successful in the second year. It still struggles sometimes with an identity crisis of, mm-hmm. of what does it do and what is it responsible for, but It was a much more active group, and they were able to do a lot of different programs in a lot of different areas.
Discuss some of the, like, such as, maybe a few such as.
Everything from bringing in a group, bringing in Canine Companions for Independence, a group that trains companion animals for disabled people, to watching a video of Out of the Past, 400 years of gay and lesbian history, to taking a trip to an Oneida reservation, to a number of different movie nights where we watched a movie on a particular topic and then discussed it. So it was a pretty active group.
How many people were in the group?
It ranged from about 20 to about 5.
And this just depends on what the activity is, and or do you sort of become a member of one of these groups, or do you just kind of come in and come out as you please? How does that go?
It seemed like people pretty much came in and came out as they pleased, and that a lot of people would attend events but didn't want to get involved in planning. And so, you know, so there was a smaller group of people who kind of were part of the mission group and planned the events, and then a much larger group of people who would attend things.
And if somebody from FACT staff was really interested, had a sister who was visually impaired, for example, and she could come and and be a member of that particular session
if she cared to. Well, and the nice thing about the mission groups is that the activities are open to everyone. And so it's not about, you know, you have to join a mission group to participate in an activity. The mission groups plan activities that are open to everyone in Chadbourne and advertised, and everyone's encouraged to participate.
So. How many minorities actually ended up in the CRC program in that second year, about approximately?
I'm going to guess probably about 10% of the building, 10 to 15% of the building, which is, I heard the percentage at one point, it was slightly higher than the overall percentage of the university, but not dramatically higher. So
pretty much representative of the university. So this was the program in the second full year with your forum. Community board, and with your mission groups. Last spring, we're getting to right up to present at this point. Last spring, when that was evaluated, what was decided upon at that point?
There was again another governance task force that talked about what was going to happen in the future. And I actually participated in a few of those sessions, and they basically the biggest question that they focused on was, is there a need for a community board
at all?
Because it had created a number of problems. One that and this is a problem that's been continual throughout the entire process, is that there's a feeling on the part of a number of students that there's a small clique that kind of runs everything. And that if you're part of that clique, you have opportunities to participate, and whatever you want to do, you can do. And that if you're not part of that clique, you're pretty much, you don't have a voice. Now, in fact, any student who wants to can participate and make things happen. And part of the challenge is that, you know, well, a lot of the students who participate a lot get to know one another and become friends. But it was felt like this board created this small group of people who were in charge.
Which is precisely what the college was working not against.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and while the board wasn't as much a decision-making body as just a working body, there were some concerns about whether or not that was a worthwhile thing. The other piece is that the board had always really struggled, had a real identity problem, in that they weren't sure exactly what it was they were supposed to do anyway. And so they were constantly looking for things to do, and sometimes board members would plan hall-wide events, but it was the kind of thing where, well, that person probably would have planned that event anyway, even if they weren't a board member. And, you know, the board made some... one of the roles that the board handled was making financial decisions that were under $50. And pretty much as long as as long as the funding request was decent, they would approve it without fail. And only if it was over $50 would they take it to the community forum meeting. And then they also facilitated the operation of the community forum office, which, you know, where students, again, could get videos and check out equipment and use computers now. And now they added a student activities room where students could get art supplies and construction paper and butcher paper to make posters and things like that. And so there were some kind of tasky things that needed to be dealt with, but people felt like we needed to get rid of this board. And there were a number of people who were very adamant about needing to keep the board, particularly people who had served on the board before and felt like people were saying, well, you didn't do a good job, and so we're going to get rid of the board. But as soon as people kind of came to realize that it wasn't about that group didn't do a good job, it was that the structure just was
This is another imperfect. One of those getting past things that you have to do.
Exactly. So once that conversation happened, it was finally decided to get rid of the board.
And that was this spring.
Yeah. And so as we go into the fall, we will, and it was also decided kind of in a separate process, but at the same time, to add a program advisor position, an upper-class student who serves in some respects as if Chadbourn is a small private college, you know, within a larger university, and Jen, the residence life coordinator, is like the student activities director. The program advisor would be like the assistant student activities director, somebody who could advise some mission groups and work with programming resources and things like that, which it was seen as this position would help, you know, with doing a lot of the advising that the board was supposed to do. And so as we go into the fall, we'll have no board. We'll still have the five mission groups. Each of the mission groups will have a support staff person who will work with them, and that was something that was added added last year, or added for last year, is the support staff role, in terms of each mission group having somebody who works with them who does a lot of the grunt work, who makes the publicity, who takes the minutes at the meetings and things like that. There will be a community forum chair, and that's pretty much it in terms of the student leadership. And we don't even really like to call it student leadership. The people with titles, I guess. Other than that, it's open to anybody. And so, you know, I think it's pretty clear that that small group of people isn't going to be able to do everything on their own. And so it limits the number of people that we have who people see as being power people. And there really isn't this group of people who have power over the whole hall.
Okay, this is the journey that you guys are taking. You started out here, and now you're working your way here. This is a very radical step, getting rid of the board. Is it going to work?
I think so. I'm pretty comfortable that it'll work. One of the concerns is that, you know, well, who does some of this stuff? You know, but I think with the addition of the program advisor position, and with we added support staff to a couple of the mission groups that didn't have it before. We got rid of community outreach mission group and added an academics mission group because, oddly enough, people felt like they wanted it to be more academic, you know. You know, people came in and the first year, you know, people complained that it was, that Chadbourn was too academic and that there wasn't enough just random fun stuff. And so then, you know, second semester of the first year, we had a lot of fun stuff, and during the second year, we had tons of fun stuff, and then people said, well, it's not academic enough. So so now we've added an academics mission group because the fun stuff seems to happen on its own. I mean, that seems to not be something that people need to worry about. So
it's funny how those things swing back and forth, too. Let me just take a half a step back to one thing we didn't cover. You had mentioned earlier that something about a community forum meeting, and I think that Katie ran it. You were talking about Katie Gibbons, of course. We didn't really get into that at all. How often were these community forum meetings held? Who was generally responsible for holding them, and what did they generally, were they responsible for doing?
Sure. Community forum meetings happen every other week, every other Wednesday night at 9 o'clock. That's been pretty much consistent throughout the years, and it's going to be the same next year. And they're facilitated by the community, then known as the community board chair, but now the community forum chair. And they last about an hour. We do everything from making large funding decisions, so anything over $50.
Yeah.
And that'll still be the same. The under $50 decisions will be made by a finance committee of students who volunteer to serve on that committee and make those decisions. The agenda for the meeting will be set now not by the board, but by an agenda setting committee of students who just show up and want to help set the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an elected group who does that. Also, traditionally, there have been discussions about, somebody was interested in putting together a trip to Boulder's climbing gym, and is interested in meeting with other people who are interested in doing that. And so they stand up and they say, "Hi, I'm interested in doing this." Send around a little sign-up sheet. Somebody else is interested in doing a penny war to help raise money for a childhood cancer organization, and they stand up and express their interest in doing that, and people sign up. People have stood up and expressed concern about things that were going on in the building, and that sparked some sometimes rather heated discussions about what was going on. Last semester we added an entertainment feature. Just some strange stuff. Everything from a band from the eighth floor that would sing about how the lead singer's girlfriend smells like flowers and how much they love their house fellow, to people doing crazy skits and things like that. So it was a lot of fun.
That's great. When I was 1 in 20,
nothing
like college days. Let's just cover a few of the areas that we really haven't talked about thus far. We focused on the governance, which is fascinating, and you of course had a lot of involvement in that, especially early on. But you were there in the first year. Talk about the staff as it existed in that first year.
Well, the first year we had Scott Seiforth, who was the Residence Life Complex Coordinator, and Tim Burkhalter, who was the Residence Life Coordinator. And also, the support staff, as I recall, consisted of the communications support staff person. And that person was responsible for doing the web page and updating all the email lists and things like that. And don't think we had any other. Oh, we had a faculty staff support staff person, a community service support staff person, and I think that was it. I could be wrong on that, but I think that was what we had, and those folks were responsible for. The community service support staff person worked half time with the Mortgage Center, and half time at Chadbourne, and was responsible for hooking people up with community service projects and things like that. And eventually, when the mission group started, that person served as a support staff to the mission group too. The faculty staff person, in large degree, was responsible for making publicity for some of the faculty staff programs, like the What Matters to Me and Why series that happened, where prominent visitors would come in and talk for about a half an hour about just pretty much anything. To kind of being the support staff for the guest room where we put up visiting dignitaries and things like that. So they made sure it was stocked with soap and things like that. And then the communication support staff, webpage and email. Then we had house fellows, and there was a really interesting range of house fellows. There was Chris and I, who had been really involved with Bach, and Chris Sansgrant, who was my roommate the year before, who had been the chair of the governance committee. And we'd been really involved in steering and also in box, so we were pretty tied to Chadbourne. Carolyn Herb, who had been really active in the steering committee. Jeff Raworth and Georgina Taggart, who were returning house fellows from Lakeshore, but were really interested in working with the program. Jeff had been the house fellow in Chamberlain
mm-hmm.
House,
mm-hmm.
Which was one of the honors houses, and so they were both really interested in the program. Tierney Boss had really expressed an interest early on. She lived in Lakeshore, and she'd been really interested in learning more about the program. Sarah Smith was really involved in WITI, and hadn't really been involved with the program initially. Grant Holtackers had lived in Chadbourne, but hadn't really been involved with the program. Jesse Gray was an honor student who had been studying abroad, I think in Africa. I'm not sure. He's studying abroad somewhere, and then come back and had actually done a phone interview for House Fellow, and was really excited about the program. So we had a really kind of excited group. As it turned out, Chris ended up not being able to House Fellow first semester, and so Brian Shanker, who had been really involved in WITI but hadn't been involved with the CRC program, came in for first semester, and then Grant, who had been on the fourth floor, left after a semester, and then Chris became a house fellow anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we had a pretty mixed group in terms of their, some were really involved in the planning of Chadbourne, some had been involved elsewhere. So it was a good mix.
That sounds like a veteran group.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the community board, the folks who had been selected, Rob Yavlon had served on the steering committee, and was really excited. Brian Hansen had been really involved with Bach. Kaylee Vickerman had been on the steering committee, and there's one more. Hanny Khalil had been really involved in Og Hall before coming over to Chadbourne. So.
There's one other person you didn't mention, and he's not exactly staff, but he's still very important in this, and that's Bill Cronin.
Yes.
What was his role, essentially?
Bill's role as faculty director, which was the title that he finally took on, was and always has kind of been that of an advisor, but someone also who works very behind the scenes, but yet somebody who's also very accessible to students. Bill does everything from sitting down with students and talking about their ideas and helping them find ways and means of making them happen to chairing the steering committee and doing a lot of long-range planning for Chadbourne, to working with the residence life staff to create opportunities to make things happen. And one of the most worthwhile things that Bill does too, in addition to that, is just using his knowledge of the university and of people in the university and university politics and to get faculty to sign onto the program and get involved, and bring in a wide range of visiting dignitaries, and interesting people, to speak in the program.
Let's talk about academics again for just one moment. Now, you did not have an academic advisor your first semester, your first year.
That's right.
Then you got one on the second year. Is that?
Yeah. Mercedes Ramirez Fernandez is our academic advisor, and she, I want to say the first year she was there part-time, and she was with the program part-time, and so she was there a few hours a week, and had an office that she spent some time in Chadbourne, and then another office at Cross College Advising. Then the second year of the program, last year, she moved to Chadbourne full-time, and so she had her office there, and all of her entire advising load was Chadbourne students. So she's great to have. She really works well with students, and having an academic advisor in the building has been a resource that students really use a lot.
Now, you have courses that are held occasionally in
Yep.
the building. Have you taken any of those?
Yes, I have, and I actually served as course assistant for one of the courses last semester.
Well, tell me about that.
We have a pretty wide range of courses, from the Ways of Knowing course, that kind of introduces students to the university and looks at liberal education, that is team taught by a student and a faculty member. And the discussion section is held in Chadbourne. There's about three or four of those. We have discussion sections of larger lecture courses, from math courses, chemistry, and some of the more popular first-year student courses. The discussion section's held in Chadbourne. And then we often have maybe one or two just random small seminar courses that are taught in Chadbourne. There was a history course the first year, and then one of the more popular courses was the College Experience Revealed in Films, taught by Chris Goldie from Educational Administration. Basically, what she does is take a wide range of popular films from the past 20 years or so, and all focusing on different aspects of college life. Students watch the films and then hear guest lectures on various aspects of student life, and discuss what it is to be a college student, how the media represents college students, and how that's accurate or inaccurate. And then they also do some, the first year they did, when I took the course, we did some writing on the individual films and our reactions to what we saw. And then this last year, we had students do some writing, and then also they had the option for a second credit if they wanted to actually make a film about college life. And so I was the course assistant this last semester, and worked with Chris and Scott, also team taught it with the course with us, to help facilitate the course. I got to give a lecture, and then also help the students who were doing their film.
While we're on academics, you're going to be, as you mentioned off tape, off mic before, you're going to be a super senior this year. This is your fifth year. Where are you academically? What are your interests at this point? How have they changed since you first walked into Chadbourne as this naive freshman 5 years ago?
Well, when I walked in day one, I was going to be a theater major, and I was going to do production design and stage management. And that was the plan, and I was convinced that that was what I was going to graduate in. And, you know, I got into the theater department and got doing some more thinking about what are the types of things that I enjoy doing. And it wasn't that I necessarily was sold on theater. It was more that I enjoyed working in kind of a collaborative leadership environment, you know, where I got to be a leader sometimes, but I also, you know, got to help make things happen with people. And so I got looking at, well, is that really what I want to do? And decided no. And started looking at student affairs and decided pretty early on, end of freshman year, that I really thought that I kind of wanted to do higher ed administration and student affairs. Now, throughout that period, I've had a number of times where I've kind of questioned that, and I decided I wanted to do radio, TV, film production at one point. I decided I wanted to do music education at one point. I wanted to do social work at one point, and it's been all over the place. Wanted to do poli-sci at one point. But I've been a psych major for a while, and have decided to, as Mary Rouse said in one of her speeches last year, to take the slow train. And so I've chosen to stay for a fifth year. You know, I was really worried when I came in, well, was it going to take me 5 years, or would I be able to get out in four? But I decided that I really valued the opportunities that I had to be involved. And so, took it a little bit slower academically, you know, took one or two less credits this semester than I would have planned. And so I'll be part-time all next year, take taking 7 credits in the fall and probably 6 in the spring.
So. And you'll continue to be a house fellow.
I'll actually be the program advisor.
Program
advisor. Chadbourne next year, so I'll change roles.
Okay, and you'll be responsible. Tell me what the program advisor is again.
Sure, I advise, and I can actually speak clearly on this now. It used to be really vague because we didn't know what I was going to do, but I'll advise the Community Service Mission Group and the Coffee House Mission Group. I'll supervise the sound technician staff for the coffee house. I'll supervise the staff that has now taken over the responsibility of operating the forum office. And then I'll advise individual interest groups and groups of students who want to do programming. So it should be, I'm really excited about it, and I think it'll really help by providing somebody else that students can come and talk to and ask questions. Great. So.
Any more comments you'd like to make about CRC? Make a general kind of a summarizing statement about your experiences at CRC to date.
I think it's been phenomenal. I mean, I think we've really struggled on some things. You know, we've had times when we had a tough time with things, and you know, there've always been students who didn't feel like they got everything out of it. But I think for the most part, the students who really check into it get a lot out of and find that. I've really learned a lot from it, in terms of making something like this happen. I've learned a lot about what education means to me, which, you know, I never really looked at what I was doing, you know, in terms of Bach and some of the other student involvement stuff, as being an important part of my education. But I really think that it has been. I've gotten much more comfortable talking to faculty members and doing those kinds of things. And in general, I think I've grown a lot from working with the program, and I think a lot of other people can say so too.
Okay, on that note, we'll end the interview.
All right.
Thank you.